I want to begin my remarks today by remembering the first time that I came to St. Ed's here. I saw a star rising in the east, and it settled right over the building. No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't that romantic. I've been in Oregon now for, I'm going on 22 years. This year will be the year longer than I lived in California, so I'm becoming a real Oregonian. But when I was new here in 1991, I spent my first year at Mount Angel, of course, and one day I decided some of my classmates were coming down here to go to the gym, and so at your athletic club, so I decided to come down and see what was at the end of the road at Hazel Green Road. I said, how odd, this road changes its name three times in 5 miles. So here I am going down the road, get to all the strip malls and stuff, and they said, this is Kaiser, and so I turned into St. Ed's. I came in here, none of this was here yet, and we had, the bricks were, the sanctuary looked different, and over here on the left was a big orange swimming pool. Anybody remember the big orange swimming pool? How many here remember that? All the rest of you, I was here before you. Now, my first impression was, great idea, ugly swimming pool, you know, so I didn't like the way it looked. But anyway, it was a good idea, though. And my first impression was, an interesting-looking building and things. And, little did I know that I'd end up being pastor here for 8 years. But on coming back, it was very interesting. I came right away to realize that this was a very special place, that we have a very unique and wonderful community here that had suffered a great deal, but with the loss of your previous pastor and then all the changes that occurred, you know, when Father Patrick suddenly departed and couldn't come home. And I came to love everything about St. Ed's and asked myself why it is that this parish is so unique. When we started doing things, one of my friends took me in a plane overhead must have been 4 or 5 years ago now, as a pilot, and that changed a few things around here, because while I was up there, I noticed that we had the ugliest landscaping in all of Salem Kaiser. I said, my God, we've got to do something about this. And so we all put our heads together and got the pump going out here, and you see what happened. Things like the cross, I'm very proud of. I really had nothing to do with that except to encourage it. And, you know, it seemed as though Kaiser was always the three Salem parishes and Kaiser, and we have nothing to be ashamed of here. It's a wonderful parish, and we had a sign that was rusty out in front that was changed before I got here, and so on. We didn't even have ads in the phone book in those days. You know, nobody knew where we were, and so that's all very exciting. When I was still in Los Angeles, I worked a swing shift. When I first started working 4 to midnight, if any of you have ever done that, my sleep is still screwed up 30 years later from that. I couldn't sleep till 4 in the morning when I got off of that shift. After that, I worked a 7 to 3:30, which was equally horrible to me, but I was so committed to daily mass, I was preparing to enter the seminary, that I would get up and go to 6:15 mass. Anybody that knows me know that's a miracle, like the second coming of Christ. Well, I was sitting in there one day at my home parish of St. Jerome, and at the consecration, I'm not making this up, I may have mentioned it before, the priest held up the host and said, this is my body which is given up for you. At that moment, we had an earthquake, a small one. I thought, Cecil B. DeMille couldn't do any better than that. And I felt safe in that building. It was built in 65. Things have changed since then, but the building was fine. Later on, after I left there and moved up here, they had the Northridge earthquake shattered every window in the building, and it was closed for a year. And that was in Los Angeles. It's a building full of windows. And I think I've been through probably 7 or 8 earthquakes of some magnitude. The worst in L.A. was the Sylmar one that actually threw me out of bed one morning. But the worst earthquake I've ever been through was actually the Mount Angel earthquake, oddly enough, which occurred in 93. I'm very surprised. How many of you remember that earthquake? How many of you had been through an earthquake before that? Okay. I'm not alone with that. Well, I was laying in bed, and I thought to myself, oh, it's just another earthquake. I'll just lay here. And then I realized I was on the fourth floor of a building in Oregon that was not earthquake-proof. Made a quick act of contrition and got out. Well, I was enrolled at St. Mary's Parish. If you look at some of the old directories, you'll find me in there. I was there for 5 years until I switched over to Queen of Peace after my pastoral year. So they let me in. Father Emmanuel Clark was a friend of mine. At that time, he was associate, and Father Edmund Smith was the pastor, my spiritual director at that time. So they let me in with a hard hat to see what damage had been done to St. Mary's. And it was amazing, because here we had the nave, which is the main part of the church here. We don't have transepts, but they do. And the right transept, as you look at the altar, had separated by about this much at the top. Unbelievable. Still standing, but separated. It was real scary looking. And so we ended up worshiping in the beer garden for about 9 months. None of you have ever been in there, right? The beer taps were right behind the altar. Father Emmanuel wanted to put the wine in there, you know, that'd be easier for Mass, you know. So, providentially, they were building the hall when this occurred. So they sped that up a little bit, and when that was completed, we moved into the hall. And so then the church was done right. But I remember, because I knew these priests so well from having been in the parish myself, they really suffered putting that church back together because it is so special. My first impression of St. Mary's was beautiful church, but boy, does it need a paint job on the inside. But if you lived through it and you grew up with it, you didn't want to change a thing. And yet it had to be repainted. And so they went through agony and struggles with all kinds of divisions and fighting. And now they've got the prettiest church in the whole valley, don't they? It's just a beautiful church. But I thought to myself, there is no way that I am ever going to try to do a building project after seeing this. And the Trinity is sitting in heaven thinking, okay, next on his agenda. If you want God to laugh at you, say something you won't do, and you're likely to end up doing it. But I say all of that because I think it's important that I explain to you the process that I came to in going forward with what we're doing here. I think I haven't talked about it yet to the group at large. We won't be asking for the capital campaign for some months. I just wanted you to have something to think about. The process of conversion for me was a long one. As you know, this all began with a master plan, which I myself set in motion. We'd had several attempts for one reason or another, didn't bear fruit through no fault of anyone that was involved in it. But after the bus terminal, we realized we have no plan. We can't even replace the carpet in the church. We don't know what we're doing. Don't want to waste money. So we, through a long listening process, it took longer than I ever thought possible, we got a master plan. I somewhat naively didn't realize that master plans usually lead to doing something. And I'm a firm believer that priests come in two flavors, builders and teachers. You really can't do both of them well. So I like to think I'm a teacher and not a builder. And I still think that's true, although when you look around here, we have done quite a few changes in these last 8 years. But it's been organic, hasn't it? We have a great community, and it's come up from below. They're not things I'm doing. Well, the first thing I want to say is that we are not proposing to put a church up to have the coolest church in the valley. I think St. Ed's deserves that, but that would not be a good reason to do this. This is a temporary structure, but I've come to love it. That's why I told you the story of my first experience here. It's an acquired taste, this architecture, but I've come to see that it makes us part of who we are. I'm very loath to change anything in a place I love so much. And it's been 8 years, and actually more like 18 if you look at it that way. However, my experience at Mount Angel and in Los Angeles, and having looked at the structural assessment that we did, makes, I think, it imperative for us to try to improve this structure and save it for the long haul. If we have another earthquake closer to here, this will not survive. And so as much as we love it, if we want to save it, we really should retrofit it. Its highest use, I believe, would be to reinforce it. We want to take the top off here and make this into classrooms. This will save it for 100 years, as well as building something for the future and making sure that this building will always be a part of our heritage here, which we all love so much. The other thing that is not the case is, although we have two masses that are full every week and sometimes three, that we, on most cases, could get by without a larger church. Now, having said that, the family mass, we could fill up three churches, couldn't we? And it grieves me that the very people that would probably build the future of our church are coming at about quarter after four and are going home because they can't get in. So I wonder how many people have been turned away by that. Nevertheless, that in itself also is not enough reason to make the sacrifice at this time. It would be great to have a bigger church, not too big. We don't want to spread out. You know, if you make a huge church, we Catholics like oil and water. We tend to spread out to the corners, so we don't want to do that either. However, this one thing that we don't have here and which we need very badly is more room. And the reason that we don't have the classrooms and the meeting rooms is because we are unique among the churches in this area in that we do not have a school. I know at times past this has been proposed. It didn't succeed. This is all before my time. But if you look at all of the other churches, they either had a school or have one, and so they have that overflow capacity when they need it, and we do not. We haven't even finished building out the hall classrooms. There's two proposed that were never built. So we are perennially short of space. In order to reinforce this building, in order to have the space that we need to grow and do the things that God, I think, is calling us to do, this building would serve its highest purpose to be retrofitted. But in order to do that, we need to have a new worship space. I think that the third question that comes up, and it's a very, very legitimate one, is with the financial situation in our country right now, is this not a time to wait? And I think there's two answers to that. I've struggled with that myself very deeply. I think the first thing is this might be the new normal for our country. Maybe there won't be a better time. That's the first thing. The second thing is that if we had done this 5 years ago, the cost to do it would be at least 40% higher. That the building costs are now at a 10 to 20 year low. This is why you're seeing buildings going up all over River Road, even though there's space available, because it is a very inexpensive time to build. Whether you're looking at the architect fees, the capital campaign fees, or the cost of building it, everything is going at sale prices. So while it's harder to raise money, we have a lot less of it that we have to raise. So when you look at it, this might be a good time. The other thing to consider is that things have to be just right to be able to do this. You have to have a pastor that is willing. Also, you can't just jump right into this parish and do this. You have to be here for a while. We have to have a good committee, and we have the best committee in the world. And God gave us such wonderful people in this parish to help put this together. You have to ask yourself if God isn't encouraging us to take a risk. It is a risk. Life is a risk. But I think that there is, perhaps, as I said before, a greater risk, and that might be to do nothing. People made a sacrifice in the past for what we have today, and perhaps God is calling us to make a small sacrifice for the future. I think that we intend to do only what we can afford. There are a lot of things that can be put off if we need to. If we did everything, you know, you saw the figure in the paper, but that would be if we're able to accomplish both buildings at once. It would be nice to get going on it. My impressions of St. Ed's and yours is that most of us love our church very much. I want to do everything I can to make sure that St. Ed's stays the way it is. It's for me to be involved in a building project is a huge sacrifice. It's one that I don't make lightly. It's not my favorite thing to do. I just feel that as your pastor that it's what we need to try to do. So, as I say again, life is a risk, but whether you're the wise men taking a long journey to find an unknown king, or you yourselves in your life's journey, a journey in which one never takes a risk is a journey without life. It's a journey without hope. The faith journey is itself a risk. We ourselves perhaps are called to make a leap of faith for others.